Welcome to today's edition of the Exploring Mining Podcast, featuring stock news from TSX, TSXV, CSE, ASX, NASDAQ, and New York Stock Exchange mining companies, plus interviews with CEOs and leading experts.
Hi, everyone, and thanks for joining us again on the Exploring Mining Podcast, featuring an exclusive interview with Terry Lynch, CEO of Power Nickel and founder of Save Canadian Mining. In this interview, we start the conversation with the initiative for Save Canadian Mining and how to get involved in helping markets for juniors against predatory short selling. We move into discussions about Power Nickel, personally to me an exciting nickel story in the junior space here in Canada. Power Nickel trades under the symbol PNPN on the TSX Venture. We speak about what makes Power Nickel a standout junior with some amazing technologies behind them and strategic partnerships to help them go the distance. Terry speaks about their 2023 drill results and plans for drilling this year. As a reminder, this podcast may contain forward-looking statements and investors are reminded to do their own due diligence. Enjoy the show. Terry, welcome to the show. For listeners that aren't familiar with your background in mining, can you talk to us a little bit of how you started in the mining sector and how you started Save Canadian Mining?
Sure. So I started really as an investor, been an investor for, you know, pretty much since it was like, I don't know, shortly out of university, I guess. And they started the Hemlock discoveries and stuff like that. And it was pretty exciting and, you know, made some money, lost some money. Like most people don't really know what you're doing. But yes, yeah, so I got the mining bug and sort of been always an investor. And then, about maybe, I guess, 12 or 14 years ago, a friend came to me who had made an investment in a mining deal and needed some help getting some, you know, a board member on. So I helped him out with that. That became the predecessor to Power Nickel. And we ended up, you know, the people that were running at the time were, you know, typical sort of, you know, they actually had a decent project in Chile and they, you know, went at it more as promoters as opposed to really trying to develop it. And, you know, anyway, we ended up having to sort of do a proxy battle to oust them. And then we took over back in 2011, 2012. And it was sort of careful what you wish for because, you know, we liked the properties and felt that, you know, they would be ultimately, you know, bona fide. But, you know, then mining just went into a tailspin, as you know, back at that point, and then it was just, you know, it was just been a very tough, you know, 10, I guess, almost going on 15 years now process. And but we always believed in the properties, and then when we started to lose a little confidence in Chile, we moved on into, you know, getting the projects in BC, and then ultimately our big project was we acquired 3 years ago in Nemaska, Quebec, the nickel project called NISC, and that's really been what's transformed the company and you know, our whole approach. Now, Save Canadian Mining, we started about maybe almost 4 years ago now, PDAC. We started at PDAC 4 years ago, this PDAC. And we started it because we just felt, you know, I was there on a Sunday with all my booth mates, you know, the other, you know, CEOs of, you know, junior explorers. And there was nobody there. I mean, like you could have shot a cannon through the place. We thought it was, you know, it was then until it come now. But, you know, I remember saying to the guys and saying, God, I can't believe it. You know, there's nobody here. And they said, well, you know, finally they're charging $20 a head to get in. And I thought, you got to be kidding me. You know, because it used to be free to go to the investor exchange. And then I thought, well, you know, just, you know, there's so many, you know, emails you get from PDAC on various things. And, you know, you just never have enough time. And it was like they said that all of a sudden they were going to charge, even though we were paying. Anyway, so that was frustrating. And I thought to myself, well, and they don't really focus on the key thing, which is we can't raise money. We can't raise money because of the games that are being played in the financial market. And I thought, well, you know, if they're not going to do it, then somebody's got to. And honestly, thinking about getting out of the business, and I just thought, you know, before I go, I should try and change this one thing, you know, and not knowing how hard it would be, I naivete, really, I talked to Eric Sprott and a few guys, and we decided, well, we try to put this together and stop this. What we saw as we were campaigning really for the tick test to get that reinstated because we thought that that would stop the short selling, which it would. But, you know, then as we got into it, became it's like an onion. There was another layer and another layer and another layer of, problems, and you know, we've been trying to work our way through them over the last, you know, 3 years plus. It's really not been successful, honestly. I got to say, we've made some exposure gains, I guess, but I think in the last few months, there's been some legal precedent set in the U.S. that will ultimately come up here that is going to allow us to make some changes, because now, for the first time ever, the banks, who are ultimately providing the gateway to these, you know, offshore hedge funds that are doing the predatory short selling, they're now going to be held responsible. And that's the game changer. And I don't think, you know, people realize that. Maybe even the banks don't. But that's what our job now is, to make them aware, hey, guys, you've got a ton of exposure here. You've almost killed the industry by allowing this to happen. And it's time we stop this, because the money isn't to be made in the short side anymore. The money's to be made in the long side. So I think, you know, there's a chance of, you know, if everyone pulls in the right direction here, that we can actually turn this around. It doesn't have to be a sad story. It could be a great story. It could be the greatest story ever, really, because there is such value in mining right now. The problem is, you know, I just got off the phone with a seasoned mining investor just 15 minutes ago, and he's saying, you know, I really want to invest in your deal. But he said, the market's telling me no. You know, and I was saying, well, And he says, not just deals. There's a lot of deals like that. I said, John, you're right. But I said, you know, you got to back the deals that are going to become mines, because mines eventually get paid. And so that's the moral of our story in Power Nickel. But, you know, it sort of speaks to the whole problem. Regular investors in the space have been scared away by the market. And that's really not good for anyone. And it's destined for the miners. So, you know, we've got to sort of dig in our heels here now and turn it around. And thankfully, the courts have given us a bit of a window, and we've now got to get our industry association, PDAC, needs to come, you know, and support its members. Well, the members are going to have to do something about it, you know, because there's no rolling over anymore. We're at death's door. If we need to stop it now, and if we stop it, and there's every reason to believe we can, then we'll have the biggest mining boom in history, and everyone will be happy.
Well, I applaud the effort and the campaign for it. I was on your website and the press release where you talked about the fact that Canadian mining companies contributed $2 billion less in economic activity since the repeal of the tick test in 2012. I mean, that's a huge number for the sector. Have you had some feedback from a couple of the talk that you had with Eric Sprott of some of the investors in the junior space and what their feedback is?
Yeah, I mean, we had obviously the you know, the Black Friday event we hosted, you know, we had just a ton of people on the call, and we've had a lot of people listen to the tape. And over 160 meetings requested as a result of that, where people need to get more information about how they can help and, you know, what it means. And so we're trying to do that. And of course, now, the challenge I've got is I got a full-time job and then some with Power Nickel, because we've got a very exciting nickel discovery that we think can be a mine, and we're busy than hell on that. And Safe Canadian Mining is a volunteer. There's no SNAP. There's just, you know, a group of us volunteers trying to, you know, change you know, these draconian rules. You know, so but we're going to try and put together some good content for the companies, so they can explain things to their shareholders, and that can also begin to pressure the regulators. Like, we went out for Power Nickel. We went out and we hired Share Intel, which is, I think, one of the other new breakthroughs in the space. Is there's actually evidence that you can collect that's not hearsay. So this is not like, hey, you know, Terry's got, you know, a silver hat in his head. He's a bit of a conspiracy theorist, and you know, you'll hear that. But the reality is, no, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. In fact, you know, if anything, I'm very much a realist. But I've gone out and got evidence now. Evidence has been used 10, 11 times in a court of law. One that's won settlements for these firms. Serious settlements, like 10 to, basically 10 to 100 million in settlements. And so that's serious money. This evidence basically shows that for our case that, you know, with almost 10 million shares are short in about 80% of the market that they can get their hands on, because you can't get your hand on 100% of the data. You can get 80% of the data, but the data comes from Broadridge, CDS, TSXV, unimpeachable sources. So this has been used as evidence many, many times and never been not accepted. So this is not hearsay. This is a fact, you know, and what they say, you know, the most learned litigators in the space say that in the 20% that we don't get, that's really the direct market access. That's where all the real shenanigans go on. And it's much worse there. So if I've got 10 in the 80%, it's probably two or three times worse than that other. So it's a significant problem. And that's just, it's not just Power Nickel. I'm just the first one that's got this evidence, you know, for mining. But there's other miners are about to do it because this, they're now realizing that, hey, we got to do this. And soon we're going to get 20 guys together with this evidence. And then it's going to be, hey, how do you deny that? There's 20, we could probably get 200. It's a serious problem. There's no question about it. And the regulators, unfortunately, they live in an echo chamber. They don't want to believe that their system doesn't effectively police it. So they don't want to see any of the real evidence. They just look at their own numbers and say, oh, well, look at this, you know. But, I mean, their evidence, the numbers that they get, we told them this right off the get-go when we made the submission to the Ontario Task Force review of the, you know, security industry in Canada. We said, like, your collection of your data is antique, doesn't provide transparency, doesn't show the information. And even that showed there was a short problem. They said it wasn't. And after much harassment, I finally got that information, which I had to swear in a secrecy I wouldn't disclose. But I did make it into this public document, which eventually will be disclosed, and it'll show that even their own information, IROC was at the time, now it's called Ciro. Yeah, the short selling in these small cap names is a problem. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to look at and say TSX fees at its all-time low, other than that dip in the pandemic, and the markets on the commodity side are almost at a high. So what's wrong? Is it, you know, there's something wrong. You know, the Australians are kicking butt out there. They're raising money and they're doing much better than we are. Something's radically wrong in Canada. We need to wake up.
So for any of the companies that want to join the initiative or any of the investors that want to help support, where can they reach out or where can they find some information?
And yeah, so you can go to savecanadianmining.com and sign up there. You can contact me at terry@savecanadianmining.com if you're one of the companies, and I'm happy to, you know, to help you in any way I can. Just, you know, help everyone to learn that they can actually engage, get evidence for their bone cells, and begin to protect yourself. Because what we've done by filing this with Ciro, and what we did before we filed with Ciro and FINRA in the U.S., is we sent these seven investment banks who have the shorted, you know, over, you know, have net, what is called a negative trade imbalance. The first thing we did was we said, hey, we've found this negative trade imbalance, you know, which is unimpeachable. It's absolute hardcore data. Can you explain it in some other way? Because this doesn't reflect in the short report. It doesn't reflect in anything we can see out there officially. So if you got some other rational explanation, we're open to hearing it. Otherwise, you've got some guys that are offside in your book. You need to close that out. So we sent out 14 letters over a period of months, two responses, mostly bogus responses, which we responded and said, hey, it's not like that. It's like this, and nothing to those. So ultimately, we gave these people a chance to do the right thing, and they, at this point, they still haven't. But now we're saying to the regulators, okay, regulators, we tried to solve it as one should do before you get into the regulatory thing. Deal with people straight up, which we've done. They didn't respond. We got the evidence. Now you guys need to do something. Now, do I believe the regulators will do anything? No. I honestly don't. These guys, they basically, it's like putting a fox in charge of a chicken house. Doesn't make sense to me to be self-regulatory in the financial community. I think it's an absurd concept. I think we actually need to have proper government oversight of that and take the bankers out of the game, because you got a bunch of ex-bankers regulating bankers. How does that work? They just see things from their own echo chamber. They don't see things from the investor's perspective. They don't see things from the perspective of the companies. You know, they talk a good show, but they don't really see it. And the proof is in the pudding. As I said, TSXV all-time low, commodity markets nearing an all-time high. That's all the evidence I need.
I love the initiative, and I was always taught to write letters when you have an issue with a regulatory body since I was probably six. So I think that it will resonate with a lot of people, what you're doing, and I think hopefully a bunch of companies will join this year, and, you know, we can hopefully see some change. I want to switch over now to talk about Power Nickel. So for some of the followers that are maybe new to the story, can you just give us a general overview of the company and your project?
Yeah, for sure. So Power Nickel is basically all about developing the Canada's next high-grade nickel sulfide mine in Nemaska, Quebec. So we just posted our inaugural 43-101, about 7.2 million tons, you know, 1.13% or so nickel EQ. Pretty high grade, and we think the grade's going to improve. Amazing location. It's literally off the highway in Nemaska, which is Nemaska's about just a little south and east of James Bay. So it's the seat of the Cree government. Quebec is arguably the best place in the world to be looking for critical minerals. Three big reasons. One is infrastructure. So as I said, we're located off of like Route North. Across the road is Hydro-Quebec substation. So power and roads right there. We're 8 kilometers outside of a town in Damascus, which has got a regional airport and is also the seat of the Cree government. And like our drillers, when they finish at night, they go and they stay at a beautiful hotel that's owned by the Cree. And we, you know, working closely with them. The James Bay Cree are very pro-business and pro-mining, and they've got a number of initiatives, you know, to take advantage of that. And we're working closely with them. And that's the other thing Quebec's done a great job with is working with the First Nations to make sure they see the benefits of mining and that they get a piece of it. So that's good. So there's very little community risk there. And then the third thing is, of course, the amazing fiscal incentives that you get in Quebec. So we've done a number of what we call them 2-for-1 exploration deals where we raise money at, we just raised money at 50 cents. The stock was around 24 or 23. You know, what happened was Quebec-based investors invest at 50 cents. We bring in back in investors at 25 cents. It was a unit deal, so 50 cents and a half warrant at 50. And they buy it at 25 cents. They get the share and a half warrant at 50. The company got 50 cents to work with because of the 2-for-1 in Quebec, but the investor got in at 25 cents. So it's a really great sell for them as well. So it and then you get your long-term investor in right now as opposed to traditional flow through where they take the tax breaks, but in, you know, 120 days and it comes free. Most likely you're getting blasted that stock, you know, and it's, you have to get new investors to that point. So it's almost self-defeating. But this one is you get the permanent investor now who's believing in the project and invests in it and rides with it. So that's a real benefit for Quebec. You can raise money in these tight capital markets. And then they've also done this now for development. So if we're to build this mine, and we think we will in a few years, probably will cost, you know, say $400 million. Well, a good half of that could come from tax credits from the federal government and the provincial government, 30% from the feds and 25% from the province. So that's phenomenal, you know, sort of core infrastructure. The key, I think, for us is that we think this is going to be a really big mine. Like, I would say 10 million tons would be, you know, sort of the minimum mine to get going. So we're almost there. We think, you know, had we been able to count some of our other holes, we probably would have got there, but we're confident we'll get there shortly. You know, we're still, you know, be drilling in January. We used a very neat new technology called ambient noise tomography, and it's a company out of Australia called Fleet Space Technologies. We came across them when Talon Metals, which is one of our peer group companies, put out a announcement they're using them, and I thought, well, what's that? Hadn't heard of that before. Did some discovery, and you know, I brought my scientific team in. They did their discovery, and initially we were quite, you know, skeptical, but then after 2 or 3 meetings, we said, wow, this could be game changer. So we've used this super sensitive seismic, and it's identified a very key signature for our deposit. So we're able to find that. I've had some successful drilling as a result of it, and we're about to do this next campaign is really built on it. And we think, you know, they've identified, we've got one pod. We think there's another 4 pods that they've identified. This first pod's, you know, at 7.2 now, we think it's going to go to, you know, 10 plus. We think these other pods are sort of, they range from 50% to 60% to a couple of them over 100% of the same size. So, you know, there's just a ton of opportunity there. Plus, this is all from surface to 500 meters. And then mostly in nickel, it's deeper. So nickel, like Raglan, or, which is a big mine in Quebec, or Voisey's Bay, which is in Labrador, or Norilsk, which is the world's only $1 trillion nickel mine, only $1 trillion mine, it's in Russia, they're all deeper, like 500 meters to 2 kilometers deep. So there's probably likely something very deep there. Plus, you know, we've got a ton of PGM. So it's not just nickel. We had a hole where we had 8 meters of 1 ounce PGMs. And we're getting, you know, almost, you know, 1.2, you know, PGMs, grams per ton. With our nickel, so it's a pretty exciting multi-metallic project. We've got industry in there now, which sort of says that hey, there's something serious there. We have a company called CVMR. They're doing a full feasibility study on NISK right now, and they've invested you know, a couple of times, several million dollars. In the last time, it was more than double the market price. You know, 90 cents was a buyback, so it was like 45 net, so stock was around 25, 23. So that was a good sign. And they're working on it, and they basically, they have 18 plants around the world, and they make such interesting nickel projects, such as the U.S. $100 bill is nickel plated with their nickel plate. They're using their nickel powders. And then they, their biggest customer is the U.S. Department of Defense, has two joint ventures with the U.S. DOD. And the super collider up in Sudbury has these multi-million dollar nickel tubes, 5/9 purity. They made those. So they're pretty much the top technical nickel producer in the world, or certainly amongst them. And they needed a new source of class one nickel. And they believe that power nickel is like the next guy in the business, you know. So they like it, and they do, since they've made a second subsequent investment, they potentially could put up the capital stack to build it. So that's one of the things that's unique about us, is that, you know, we don't necessarily have to rely on the market. Like, you know, I'm irritated and disappointed the market hasn't responded to the success we've had. And eventually I think it will. But if we have to, I think we can build it with industry. And I think that's, in this market, you want to have that comfort to know that you can go there. So that's, you know, certainly inspiring. And, you know, we say to people, you know, when we're out pitching, you know, Power Nickel, we say we're the best nickel investment in the planet. And they say, well, how can you make such a bold claim? And I say, well, it's really the math. You know, so if you look at, you know, the tons we've found in our market cap, you know, in high-grade nickel sulfide, and compare that with other high-grade nickel sulfide peers across the Australia, you know, Africa, you know, Europe, North America, you know, we're trading at about 10%, you know, of what we should be. So that's what makes it such an asymmetric bet. And I think if you're an investor out there, that's what you want. You want an asymmetric bet that's got value that's shown, and you got industry that's in the game, you know. So yeah, it's a pretty exciting time to be, you know, in our shoes at Power Nickel. And we're obviously fighting through some of these irritants like the shorts. But that's not going to stop this project. You know, this project's too good. The ore body is just too good. It's going to be, you know, a big mine, I think. And it's just a question of whether we'll be able to make the, I have no doubt in my mind that we're going to, in my mind, make a 10-bagger here. But maybe we could make 50, you know, if we were able to get the market to respond the way it should be. But otherwise, we'll have to do it with industry. And, you know, we'll just, you know, get taken out a bit earlier than we'd like. And, you know, that'll be that. But still, it's an enviable opportunity, and we're really, you know, stoked about what 2024 has got in front of us. We got tons of new, you know, drilling coming. We got the benchmark studies from CVMR, which will be out in early January. That should be a bit of a milestone that should show really high recovery rates, and that'll be very encouraging. And you know, more we're doing the spin out. We're spinning out our copper gold subsidiary, which will be a free bonus, which we think is worth sort of 10 to 15 million, which is almost half of our market cap that we're getting nothing for right now, but we'll spin that out for our shareholders. And that will also be a tool to trap the shorts. So lots of good stuff happening. So it's an exciting story, and we're looking forward to a great 2024.
You seem like a very undervalued stock at current. Two of the things that you just kind of making my job easy for me that stand out is obviously the ambient noise tomography. If you can go a little deeper into that, just for some of the listeners who aren't really aware of the technology and how that changes the scope of the project and the potential. And then obviously your relationship with CVMR, it's another big standout for your company as well, which, you know, a lot of juniors don't necessarily always have those relationships. So I think those are two very important points.
Sure. Yeah, they really are. I think those are the key points. The ambient noise, basically what it is think of it like almost as if you put a little landmine on top of the surface of your area that you want to explore, and you put them in a grid. So you put them in like a 30-meter grid or 100-meter grid, depending on how, you know, how much you want to cover. And then it sends a sound pulse down 2,000 meters into the earth, and it comes back and is captured as a sound map. And they basically, and then they ship this information wirelessly, because they're connected to a satellite in the sky that Elon Musk put up for these guys, SpaceX, and they basically process it up there in real time, and they send it back down, and they basically correlate that, you know, using AI and other, you know, techniques, algorithms, etc., to basically they look at all your historic scientific information. So of course your drilling data, your downhole EM, airborne EM, you know, your gravity IP, all that stuff, and they basically can, you know, allow you to have like a 3D visualization of your deposit. And it's amazing. We've got great structural control. The one big takeaway we got from this was that we were able to see the faults and the various, you know, lithography much clearer than in any other technique, and that's allowed us to understand this deposit a lot faster. And the other thing it did is it basically showed what this super sensitive seismic really does is it measures the velocity of rock. I didn't know they could do such a thing, but that's possible. And it's they basically 4,500 DPS. It's an ultramafic rock. That's where our ore body is in this ultramafic sequence. And when that goes from 4,500 to 3,700, 3,600, that's where the mass of sulfides, which contains the nickel and the iron, get deposited, and the platinum, and the palladium, and the cobalt, and the copper. And so almost on a one-for-one basis. So what happens is, it gave us a bit of a signature to look for through the rest of our ultramafic sequence, which just stretches out 7 kilometers long. We'd already stepped out from our NISC main 5.5 kilometers, and we struck that, 8 meters of 1 ounce PGMs, almost at the end of our exploration ground. So showing that that whole area has been charged. So super encouraging. And then, so that's why we brought in this technology we thought, hey, we got something big here. We got to go at this, with the best tech. And so we did. And they came back, and wow, we're just super impressed. And we think that we've identified at least 4 additional pods to explore, where we can, again, like NISC Main is at 7.2 million tons and growing. We think we've got multiples of those. And so we're going to go, and that's, this winter we'll be starting to drill those. So that'll be super exciting. So that's, the ambient noise tomography. And then, the neat thing about it, as we drill and get more information, it's iterative. So we'll put it back into the system, and then we'll continue to get us, better and better looks in the future at everything we're doing. And we'll have them back in next summer, and we'll probably do some deeper probes as well, so we can get down deeper and see, just what we got going on down deep. But yeah, super exciting to use that. We actually did a really good podcast with Fleet just about a month ago or so, and it's on our website. You can certainly, for people interested in understanding more about the tech and how it's being used, you can listen to that. That'd be good. With CVMR, there's 3 ways to make nickel. And smelt it, you can use hydrometallurgy, or you can use chemical metal vapor process. So the last one is what CVMR is sort of the world's best at. They have 18 plants using it around the world, and it's been around for 100 years. They've been, working on it for the last 25. They've been around for a while. It was initially, they were owned 20% by Inco, and now that they bought them out many years ago. And many ex-Inco guys work at CVMR, some of their most senior people. And they're building plants all over the world, really, Africa, the Middle East, United States, and obviously we hope to get them to come here. One of the neat things they do is they make powders, nanopowders, anodes, fine wire, and precursors for the electric vehicle space. So they make finished products. And I've learned, this is my first nickel project, I've learned that really, well, nickel miners ultimately end up, when you have a mine, you get paid. But you know who really makes the money in nickel? The refiners. The Glencores and the BHPs, the Valleys, these guys are making a boatload of money in refining. And the neat part about the CVR process is they ultimately are a refiner. So they make a finished product for us at our site. So the difference is, for example, in our 43-101 that we just finished, our recovery rate's around 70%. It's okay. Not fantastic, but it's reasonable. But we expect recovery rates of around 90% with CVMR because of making a finished product. So almost 30% better. Not only will we get better recovery on our nickels, and our copper and cobalt and palladiums and platinums, but iron is a waste product in the concentrate that you make for the smelters. So they don't want it, so you have to take it out. But for CVMR, it's a paying product because they do iron powders. So that represents about 12% of our ore body. So all of a sudden it goes from being a waste product, which costs you to take it out, to now being a paying thing. So they expect that if you're getting X from your revenue for your concentrate, they're going to get you 2.5 to 3X. So at almost no additional cost. So that's going to be transformative, really. And it's, we're looking forward to bringing those numbers to life and evidencing that starting really in January, the benchmark numbers that'll come out. So yeah, Steve Merritt, super great group to work with. I'm heading over to owned by a Saudi family, Saudi, but he's Canadian. He's been here for many years. They've run CVMR out of Toronto. I met him through a banker friend of mine, and I had never heard of him. And, you know, most people hadn't, but, you know, clearly, you know, you don't get to print the U.S. to make the U.S. $100 nickel plate, I expect, unless you pass some sort of serious tests, and you don't get to have two JVs of the Department of Defense and Lockheed Martin and, you know, all these big defense contractors, unless you're really good at what you do. Yeah, they've been really great to work with, and we're looking forward to continuing to advance that program going forward. And we expect, after we do the benchmark studies and release those in January, we'll do a podcast with CVMR, just like we did with Fleet, so we can, you know, help our shareholders get to know them better and understand why they like NISC and why they see a future in it.
Well, that's fantastic. Technology and good partnerships. I mean, that's always good to see with a mining company. I wanted to jump in. Can you talk a little bit about your management, and then we'll go into capital structure after?
Yeah, so management-wise, you know, we've kept it pretty lean because, you know, I think it's been my experience in investing that the guys that put the money in the ground, the management teams that put the money in the ground, ultimately, you got to make the discoveries first, and then you sort of staff up afterwards. If you do it the other way around, you never really make the discoveries because you just burn out of cash. So we kept it pretty lean. But what we did to, you know, accommodate for the science that you have to do in this business is we went out and we hired the best consultants. So we for us, for example, we used a company called GeoVector. Joe Campbell and Adam Finley and Eric, the team, they've just been amazing. Joe's a bit of a legend in the industry, lots of great success stories. And they are basically they sit on the rigs and execute the drill programs for us, and they've been phenomenal. And the guy who's our VP of exploration, Ken Williamson, he was the first geologist on the project. He actually modeled it when we first bought it. And he was an independent consultant at the time, did a great job modeling it, obviously succeeded. We had 7 of 8 holes hit, so he had a very good theory of what was happening up there, has worked extensively in that region. And so I brought Ken in because he's a Francophone and he understands the lay of land there very well. And he sort of manages, you know, GeoVector for us. And, you know, we really work closely that way. So our science team is deep in that layered respect. You know, obviously, we've got a very good board, a very experienced board. Our chairman is an ex major corporate lawyer. You know, Greg McKenzie used to run Haywood as an MD and runs now a silver mining company. So, extensive mining experience. Les Mallard, one of our bigger shareholders and a very successful businessman. So, really good, practical, hardworking investors, really. The board owns about 4%, it's always a good sign. And, so they've kept us on our straight and narrow and focused on, you know, pouring the money in the ground and then trying to, you know, demonstrate value to the market and to the industry so that they could, you know, come forward and support it. Because obviously it takes a lot of money to develop a mine. And, you know, and that happens when you prove to them that you've got an ore body. And I believe we've done a very good job of proving that we've got a very significant ore body, and the team's done a good job of, you know, making that happen. There were about 145 million shares outstanding right now. About half of that's owned by the Lynch family. Has been the biggest investor. Critical Elements owns about 10%. They own, you know, we farmed in, so we own 80% of the deposit. They own 20%, and they're a great group of guys to work with. Stern family owns 10%. BT Global and Palace Capital own each about 3%. CVMR now owns about 4%. And recently, Rob McEwen stepped in for about 1.5% or so. So obviously, a very knowledgeable mining investor. There's a group of economists to get him in the deal. So collectively, we have, and the board ends up with 4%. So more than 50% certainly in the core group. And significantly, I think the last several financings, those have been the guys that have been writing the checks. So the guys that know the deal the best are, you know, even writing more checks. Both a sign of the times, but also a sign of their confidence. You know, that's been good.
Those are great names to have behind you. I wanted to just go back. You mentioned that you had your new 43-101 out. Can you just talk to us a little bit about some of your recent drill results from 2023, and then talk a little bit about what your drill program is for 2024?
We had had some amazing holes. We had like 40 meters of 1.6% nickel EQ. Followed that up with 10 meters of almost 3% nickel EQ, 60 meters of 1.6%, 15 meters of 1.5. So we've had, we call it the river of nickel, and we sort of showcase it on our PowerPoint. You know, we sort of show how it flows, you know. And it, like all rivers, it's wider and narrower and thicker and deeper, but generally it's been pretty consistent. So it's been a really sort of neat little ore body. And we think it's getting better at depth. That's what our drill results show. And so we're continuing to sort of explore at depth on our NISC main. And then, when we go back in January, we're just finishing off a couple of deeper holes on our NISC main. And then we'll be drilling where we had that really amazing PGM hole where we had, 8 meters of the 1 ounce PGMs. We didn't follow that up because it was a winter target. And that was at 60 meters of depth, so it was very close to surface. So we'll be doing several step-out holes there. And then we're going to be testing, some of our new targets to 2 and 3. And we'll ambient noise tomography 2 and ambient noise tomography 3. Not exactly how the original names, but it was just like, easy enough for us to describe them. And then we'll see, hoping that we can strike another pond, which would, I think, really be exciting. And, the neat part, when you're in this business is obviously everyone waves their arms around and says, I've got the next drill hole is going to find the big one. But, often in most cases it doesn't. The reason why we spent so much money on the ambient noise was, and all the other science that we've used, was to try and de-risk the drilling as much as possible. We've hit on our drill holes somewhere between 50 and 60% have been successful. That's really good. So it speaks a lot to the ore body, but also speaks to the scientific preparation that we've done with it. And we feel really stoked about what we see in the future of the exploration of this thing. We think there's going to be a number of big discoveries in 2024, which will open up new pods. And, we think by the time we get through 2024, we could be easily double or triple our size in what we've got discovered, and still a lot more to come. So I think this is going to be we think the Lynn Lake was 22 million tons, ultramafic. Boise Bay was plus 50. We think we'll be somewhere in between there and towards the top end. So that would make this at the end of the day, a multi-million-dollar project. And, that's what we see for it. That's what we've always seen. That's CVR, I think, sees. We just got to, fight our way through the market and get the market to sort of see this. And then I think this thing is spring-loaded. And when it runs, people are going to say, "Ah, God, I can't believe I didn't get in. Kept telling me to get in, and damn, it's so good." And it's like, the charts were not perfect. And I say to people, forget the damn charts. This is not Tesla you're buying. When you see something that's going to become a mine, buy it and own it. And, and when it takes off, you're going to be bloody thankful you did. You can't trade this like Tesla or Apple or Google or Facebook, and do these intricate sort of option strategies that all the TikTokers talk about. That's just not possible in junior mining. Junior mining's a different beast. What you got to do is look at things that are going to become a mine and back those. It was funny. I asked Eric Sprott, I said, as we were working at CKA Mining, I said, how did you become so wealthy? I mean, what's the secret now? Obviously you're getting to see every decent gold project in the world is coming to see you first. And he said, no, he said, we checked. He says, I'm actually an actuary. That's my background. So he's back tested this. And he said that, it wasn't the first steps that made his fortune. It was the second and third. He said, after the second or third investment in something, he says, I know these things are going to become mine. And then I said, I want to own 20% of them until they're mine. And he said, that's where I've made the money. And so, it's interesting. There's a super, probably, our best mining investor, and that's his principle. So that's like pretty sound. So find something that you think is really going to be mine and buy it and hold it, and don't be worried about these swings, obviously buy what you can afford and be patient. Like you gotta, that if you, if you need something to, you know, work over for you the next month, probably not junior mining. You know, because that's really like you may as well go to the, you know, the crap house or the, you know, to the casino and, you know, take a shot at, you know, red or black. I think if you've got some patience and if you're contrarian, now is, there's probably never been a better time to invest in junior mining. I think we're going to get ourselves out of the short problem because I think they've just become exposed because of this liability thing and because there's now new evidence that shows the malfeasance of these guys. And plus, guys like me have woken up. We're waking up a bunch of other people that will wake up a bunch of other people. You know, we're having podcast interviews like this, Northern Miners doing stories. This is becoming its own thing. It's going to take on its own thing. And because it's such a black and white problem, it's like nobody's denying, you know, only guys denying it are the regulators and the politicians because they don't know what to do about it. And it's really simple. You got to stop the bleeding where it's at, guys. Stop the bleeding. You know, so you say, hey, in 6 months, the rules are going to be like this. That gives the creeps time to unwind their positions to get to the long side. And really, that's where the money's going to be made. But that's what they need to do. They need to sort of stop the bleeding. And, you know, we don't expect them to change it overnight because the system probably couldn't handle it. But let's at least stop the bleeding, you know, going forward, because it's just insane.
Great advice for investors out there, and I love your enthusiasm about juniors for this year and for Power Nickel. I mean, you obviously tick a lot of boxes. If I was an investor taking a look, you pretty much have everything you need. For investors or following that wants to reach out, where can they find you?
For sure. So very reachable through our website. You know, we actually do some, you can use Calendly to set up calls. Either I take calls sort of on Friday mornings. Duncan, our IR guy, has a broader schedule. He does calls with investors that you're interested. We're pretty transparent. We're very reachable. And then we do a lot of podcasts, you know, try and keep our community up to date with, you know, what's going on. We're very transparent. I will be at PDAC, you know, speaking. I won't be exhibiting. Probably we'll be doing some of the, you know, one-to-one type of stuff and CEM and these types of things. We find that more get more bang for our dollar. Yeah, I think we have, you know, Power Nickel on Twitter, and we're expecting some good research coverage coming out in January. That should be interesting. And yeah, the exploration program is really just picking up steam and getting more intel every day as to how good it can be. So I think 2024, hopefully, let's hope that's not a train coming for us, but it's actually sunshine.
Well, thank you so much, Terry. This has been fantastic. Thank you for sharing the story.
All right, really. Thanks for having us on, and hope you all have a great day. Cheers for now.
Well, that does it for today's Exploring Mining podcast. If you'd like to be a guest or sponsor for this podcast, please contact investorideas.com. Investorideas.com reminds all listeners to read our disclaimers and disclosures on the investorideas.com website. All investment involves risk, and this podcast is not meant to be an endorsement to buy or sell securities or products. To hear more podcasts, you can go to investorideas.com/audio. And a reminder, you can also hear our podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play Music, iHeart.com, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spreaker, and SoundCloud.